reason why this entire country, so-called occupation, occurred. Why in the entire world they could have given, England could have given a small area of their own country. The mm-hmm. U.S. could have given their own, you know, a state for it, a bigger state for Israel. They could have given so many lands exist in the world, but they had to plant this cancer in this specific region, the heart of the Islamic world.
Yeah.
So there was a specific reason why they did so. And this progression and this, so much of petrol dollars spent in this, so much of, you know, taxes, the taxes taken from the people, from the, you know, American people and people from around the world are being spent in trying to, you know, make this occupation even vast. It gives us a red alert that yeah. it is now the time more than ever to combat this cancer and to remove it altogether at once. So this is why we call this an urgent matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, really, for your elaboration. And you mentioned this cancer and the amount of money that they are investing in these issues. So,
I want to add
some other.
So let me add some other points to the explanations of respected brother Muhammad about the urgency of the issue of Palestine. And mm-hmm. it is that, I mean, for every human being, there are some issues that are of high importance and urgency. For example, the issues related to eating and the issues related to breathing. I mean, this is our life. I mean, mm-hmm. we yeah. need to survive and we need to have. But there are some other issues, again, that are very urgent for us, like our security. I mean, the security of me as a person. Mm-hmm. We as the people, we as the people who are living in West Asia. So we have an issue of security. In case there is no security, our life, again, would be in danger. So it is one of the foremost yeah. priorities of us. We believe that this country here has actually endangered our security. So security, like food, like any other, I mean, material that we need for our survival is important. This security actually is quite clear if you ask any Muslim in Islam land, not only in the West Asia. It endangers the security of all of the Islamic Ummah.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are saying the consequences of this wicked existence on the scene of the earth. All the neighboring countries are in trouble and in turmoil due mm-hmm. to the existence of this cancerous exactly. complex.
Yeah.
So security is very important for us. That's why it's the most urgent issue of the slum world.
And even though we have instances of occupation, let's say the most recent one as being Kashmir,
yeah.
Occupied by the Indian government. We have many other occupations like Bahrain, occupied by, you know, the regime that is not necessarily backed by the people, or the more recent the revolution of Yemen. All these were matters that were of high priority, but none of them as the priority number one, as the priority of Palestine.
Palestine.
Why? Because all of the chaos that we see around us, it's mainly because of Israel.
And thank you for your presence here, Brother Ali and Brother Muhammad. And thank you, dear listeners, for listening to us in this episode. It was all the time we had for today's episode. And we're going to discuss this issue more in other episodes. So I bid you farewell, and I leave you in the warm embrace of Allah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every day we tell each other that this day will be the last, and tomorrow we all can go home free, and all this will finally end. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. tears. That's why I will cry. I feel scared, but I won't show my fears. I keep my head high, deep in my heart. I never have any doubt the bad is fine. Tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free.
Eye on Islam.
Assalamu alaikum, peace be upon you, and welcome to Eye on Islam, the show where we look at current affairs through an Islamic lens. Each week, we look at a news story which has a direct relevance to the beautiful religion of Islam, and we'll break it down from a Muslim perspective. Today, we're going to take a look at the lessons we can learn from the life of one of the most prominent and impactful Muslims to have ever lived in the West, Malcolm X. Malcolm was brutally gunned down in February 1965, but his journey from non-Muslim criminal to one of the loudest and most eloquent Muslim voices in the face of US racism and oppression still inspires millions of Muslims worldwide today.
On February 21, 1965, Malcolm X was gunned down whilst preparing to give a speech in New York City's Audubon Ballroom. The killing brought to a premature end one of the most inspirational revolutionary careers the world had ever known. Malcolm X is mostly renowned as a political figure of huge significance across the black and Muslim world for his tireless efforts to confront and combat racism, imperialism, and global injustice.
The history of unpunished violence against our people clearly indicates that we must be prepared to defend ourselves, or we will continue to be a defenseless people at the mercy of a ruthless and violent racist mob.
Born Malcolm Little in the U.S. state of Nebraska in 1925, his early childhood was marred by the murder of his father by white racists. In his teens, he eventually ended up in New York City. There, he spiraled into a life of crime, which ended in his arrest for burglary in 1946. Whilst in jail, Malcolm studied a variety of ideologies, eventually adopting the black nationalism of the Nation of Islam, a group he joined upon his release in 1952, rising through the ranks to minister and spokesperson. His fiery, passionate speeches against American racism garnered him popularity. He also urged the black community to become educated, strong, and self-sustainable. Eventually, Malcolm outgrew the Nation of Islam, and after performing the Hajj pilgrimage in 1964, embraced traditional Islam. Malcolm X was amongst the early voices to criticize the U.S. war on Vietnam. During the same period, he became a significant figure in advancing civil rights with his rhetorical power proving his greatest assets. Three black men were arrested for Malcolm X's assassination, two of them not at the shooting scene that day. Decades on, the legacy of Malcolm X remains strong. His family and millions of followers still doubt the police investigation, wondering whether his real killers were let go by bigger powers.
Well, joining us in the studio today to talk about the life of Malcolm X is Ahmed Hussein from Muslim advocacy group MPAC UK, which has held up Malcolm X as a role model for Muslims in the West, and Sheikh Ahmed Hanif, who joins us on Skype. He's a Muslim scholar and lecturer based here in the UK. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. Ahmed, I'm going to come straight to you on this and just ask, obviously you guys have pushed the legacy of Malcolm X in a lot of the work that you do. Just tell me, why is Malcolm X such an important role model for Muslims in the West?
Sure. It's because he was so able to articulately explain how a community of people, obviously he was first talking about the black people in America, but his thoughts on how people can free themselves of oppression is still a blueprint for ourselves in the Muslim world today. Basically, he understood that that freedom comes from resilience in a community. It's not a case of people saying, oh, if we can get rid of such and such a political leader, such and such political party coming in, that isn't enough. To reach that strength, to reach that resilience, it has to come from oneself and from one's community. And so when you listen in on his speeches, when you read his letters and you read his autobiography, you realise that what he's telling people to do is to have a sense of pride in who they are. And obviously as Muslims, and in his later time as a Orthodox Muslim himself, that means in ourselves as Muslims, in our identity and in Islam as a religion. Particularly when he was saying that America needs to understand Islam. We could actually flip that over in the modern context. Muslims need to understand Islam better, whereas Malcolm X saw in Islam and the Muslim community of his time a force for overcoming racism and division and the answers to the social ills of the Americas at the time. We as Muslims, we need to understand that Islam is inherently a force for good and a force for change. And until we understand that, like Malcolm X did, we will remain in this state of oppression that we are in today.
For sure. Now, Sheikh, let me come to you and bring you in on this discussion. Now, tell me, how did Malcolm X inspire you personally?
How Malcolm X has influenced me to even become a Muslim is because of the fact that Malcolm X saw Islam not only as the final truth, but also, when I say the final truth, I mean the final revelation of the truth that has been occurring throughout the ages. But also he saw Islam as a liberation theology. If we are aware of the struggle for justice of African Americans and Africans in the diaspora, we know that their oppression is a totalistic one. It is not just merely an economic or a social or a cultural type of revolution, but it is also a revolution in terms of our image of the divine, or our understanding, I would rather say, of the divine.
Well, that is indeed fascinating. And Ahmed, I'm going to come back to you because you mentioned some interesting points earlier about the fact that the Muslim community is in a state of oppression right now. Tell me, how can we compare Malcolm X to the type of community leadership that we have in the Muslim community today? It seems as if perhaps we're lacking some of that fiery, hard-hitting passion that Malcolm X was so famous for.
And I think passion is the word for it. He really understood that racism, that divisiveness, was destroying not just American society, but the very lives of the people around him that he saw. And that is what really drove him. That is what drove him in terms of his drive for unity. And that is something that our Muslim leaders need to realize. Islam in itself is intrinsically about unity and justice. And, you know, unfortunately, we see too many imams, you know, in the UK context, I can speak very candidly about. Unfortunately, in the UK context, we have too many mosque leaders who see their mosques as an opportunity to run some kind of social club on ethnic lines. And it's not just about unity. Our mosque leaders, our Muslim leaders, are just so small-minded. We shouldn't forget that the last few years of Malcolm X's life was spent in doing a tour of Africa and other black nations. Why? Because he wants to internationalize the cause that was so important to him. Mm-hmm. Racism in the US, he realized, needed to become internationalized because he wanted to push it as a priority, as something that needs to be resolved through the UN. So our Muslim leaders today, not only are they divisive, they're just too small-minded. And that's why, as a community, we are so riddled with issues.
For sure. Now, before we carry on this discussion, gentlemen, Malcolm X, of course, was very renowned for his fiery oratory, and some of his speeches have gone down among the most memorable and quotable of all time. Let's play out some of Malcolm X at his best.
Because nothing in our book, the Quran, as you call it, Koran, teaches us to suffer peacefully. Our religion teaches us to be intelligent, be peaceful, be courteous, obey the law, respect everyone. But if someone puts his hand on you, send him to the cemetery. That's a good religion. In fact, that's that old-time religion. That's the one that Ma and Pa used to talk about. An eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth, and a head for a head, and a life for a life. That's a good religion. And then anybody, no one resents that kind of religion being taught but a wolf who intends to make you his meal.
Police the same way. They put their club upside your head and then turn around and accuse you of attacking them. Every case of police brutality against a Negro follows the same pattern. They attack you, bust you all upside your mouth, and then take you to court and charge you with assault. What kind of democracy is that? What kind of freedom is that? What kind of social or political system is it when a black man has no voice in court, has no nothing on his side other than what the white man chooses to give him? My brothers and sisters, we have to put a stop to this. And it will never be stopped until we stop it ourselves.
Well, known as a black nationalist for most of his career, towards the end of his short life, Malcolm embraced Orthodox Islam, influenced by the Hajj pilgrimage he took in 1964. Whilst in the holy city of Mecca, he wrote a powerful letter to colleagues back in New York. Here are some of the extracts.
America needs to understand Islam, because this is the one religion that erases from its society the race problem. Throughout my travels in the Muslim world, I have met, talked to, and even eaten with people who in America would have been considered white. But the white attitude was removed from their minds by the religion of Islam. I have never before seen sincere and true brotherhood practiced by all colours together, irrespective of their colour. During the past 11 days here in the Muslim world, I have eaten from the same plate, drunk from the same glass, and slept on the same rug while praying to the same God with fellow Muslims whose eyes were the bluest of the blue, whose hair was the blondest of the blonde, and whose skin was the whitest of white. And in the words and in the deeds of the white Muslims, I felt the same sincerity that I felt amongst the black African Muslims of Nigeria, Sudan, and Ghana. We were all truly the same brothers, because their belief in one God had removed the white from their minds, the white from their behaviour, and the white from their attitude.
I'm going to go straight to Sheikh Ahmed Hanif once again and bring you in on this discussion. Now, Sheikh, tell me about this part of Malcolm X's great life. Obviously, we know about the days mostly when he was identified as a black nationalist, when he served with the Nation. But what about the fact that he became an Orthodox Muslim later in life? What about Malcolm the Muslim?
Well, I think, first of all, we have to separate the issue of black nationalism. We have to know what he meant by that. And we have to separate that from a black counter-racism, you see. I think in terms of the black counter-racism, which goes back to the ideology of the Nation of Islam and Elijah Muhammad, you know, despite what the error of this, it was quite a liberating thing for the African American. And the reason why is because the white supremacist establishment painted the world in a kind of an evolutionist type of a way, where it saw the darker races of mankind as inferior and the white races of mankind as, you know, superior. And what Malcolm X and the Nation of Islam did was they flipped that around And they basically said, you know, who is the person who was guilty of the most oppression and the most killing and the most genocide and so forth? And if there's anybody who was supposed to be a devil, it wasn't a black man, but it was a white man. Of course, you can see how liberating that was. You know, it's like, for example, you know, many of the, let's say, third world or what's so-called third world countries, how they look at America, for example, and in Europe. You know, they all emulate Europe, they all emulate America because they believe that, quote unquote, they are the most advanced nations in the world. And by virtue of that fact, or that illusion, they find themselves under the foot of these organizations, of these countries. And so therefore, when one flips the switch on them and say, no, these are the most, let's say, for example, in an extreme sense, the most depraved countries in the world, it kind of changes that psychological orientation. What he meant by black nationalism is that, look, black people should not be expecting their oppressor to give them rights. Black people should take their rights. And one of the ways that you can take your right is to be self-sufficient, is to not spend your money trying to whiten your skin and straighten your hair and color your hair and putting on colored contact lenses and dancing the night away. You know, that what black people should do is pool the economic resources to be economically independent in the United States of America or in the world as possible with justice. And so they will be able to stand up on their own two feet and fight international oppression, on their own. And so by the time he ended up going to Hajj, what he realized is that Muslims or Islam was not a racist religion. In fact, that he saw Muslims, as he describes it in his autobiography, whose skin was the whitest of white, whose eyes were the bluest of blue. And when you ask them about their race, they would say, well, yeah, I'm white, but it's white as a kind of, one of those phenomena, you know, that describes them. That's all, you see. He said, it's different when a white man calls himself white in America. You know, it means that I'm superior. I'm the boss. And with this experience among the Muslims, he realized that, you know, this ideology of the Nation of Islam was wrong. And he came back to America with a message that was now also potent for white people to get involved.
Ahmed, I'm going to bring you in again on this. Now, obviously, Malcolm X, outspoken, he wasn't afraid of anyone. I mean, what a man he truly was. We certainly miss him now. But do you think that there is just a real problem here of Muslims just being too scared to speak out? Perhaps they're too worried about their job security, their financial stability. Malcolm X prioritized his community, first and foremost, and his beliefs.
Yeah, he prioritized justice. And he's described racism as the most explosive and pernicious evil. And so when you've got a view of an injustice like that, the passion for justice is inevitable, and that is what drove him. And so we have to question ourselves, what is our driving force in life? Is it justice? Is it even Islam? Or is it, as you said, is it our job security? Is it our comfort in our life? Because the thing is, and yet again, you know, why is Malcolm X still relevant to our lives, you know, so many decades on? Just a few weeks ago, in the UK context, just a few weeks ago, there was a report going into the counter-extremism strategy called Prevent. And what it basically detailed, you know, there's loads of interesting quotes in there. One of them is that, you know, quote-unquote Islamists use Islam as a way to define their political and moral judgments. Well, yeah, that's what every Muslim does. And yet, so what we're seeing here in the UK modern context and across the West as well, we're seeing a criminalization of Islam. And just like in Malcolm X's time, we saw the black man, the black woman, the black community being vilified, being denigrated, being satirized, and then that hatred became internalized. Likewise, we're seeing that happen with the Muslim community today as well. We are getting so used to seeing ourselves through the lens of those who want to control us that we see ourselves as suspicious. We see our behaviors as suspicious. Mm. We see, oh, we got to be more careful than the non-Muslim next door. Well, the words that we say, the tone with which we say, with which we speak.
One of the things Malcolm X spoke about, one of his most famous speeches, was the house. I guess we would say house Muslim in our case.
Field Muslim,
Field Muslim, that type of thing. What do you make of that? It still rings true today, surely.
That speaks to the effectiveness of propaganda. We've internalized something other than Islam. If we looked at ourselves through the lens of taqwa, through the lens of what does Allah want us to do, would we be seeing ourselves with such self-hatred? We need to revive our understanding of Islam. Malcolm X, you could say that, look, he was an Orthodox Muslim for not even a year. What does that say of us? Those of us who are born into the religion, those of us who revert and, you know, spend years or decades in the religion. If we are internalizing self-hatred, we need to revive our connection with Islam. That is something that if we take nothing else from Malcolm X's life, we should take that one thing, that a desire for justice, a desire for closeness to Allah, a desire for the truth, that is the one thing that is worth being driven by. Otherwise, we're going to live sad, pathetic lives, achieving nothing.
Yes, stand by your people, I think, is a strong message. Sheikh Hanif, let me bring you in on this again. Of course, some of the views which Malcolm had in his early career, he began to distance himself from or reject even towards the end of his life, things like the white devil terminology. Do you think that it's fair to say that some of Malcolm X's opinions and views could be classed as racist towards the beginning of his career?
I would say yes, but I wouldn't put this, the racism on the same level as, let's say, white supremacist racism. And I think that racism that Elijah Muhammad had preached is very, very sort of natural, if one can call it this way. You know, if, for example, you know, every time you walk down the street, police beat you up or pull you over for no particular reason, whether that police person is black or white, it doesn't matter. After a while, you'll grow up with a kind of a distaste and dislike or even hate for police, you see. I think the reaction, the racist reaction of Elijah Muhammad was something like that, you know, and basically what it did, you know, despite its negativity, it did achieve a very, very important cultural shift from the black internalization of white supremacism to you know, a black affirmation of their superiority over white people. But in fact, it wasn't really supposed to be like that. You know, in fact, what it did was it overturned a racism against white supremacism by creating a supremacism of its own. It was a falsehood, but it did wake a lot of people up. And then in the process, you find that people started to find contradictions just in their lives, you know, just in terms of relating with other Muslims and so forth. They found contradictions in this, and they went towards the truth.
Thank you, Sheikh. And Ahmed, I'm going to come back to you before the show ends. We've only got a few minutes left, unfortunately. But just tell me, I mean, obviously there's a lot of questions surrounding his death. We don't quite know what's happened because there's a lot of conspiracies there. But tell me, what have we lost, and what do you make of how he ended? I mean, it's surely not coincidence that one of these great leaders of the community was ended in such an appalling and suspicious way.
Of course it is. What was taken from us was someone who is and was a role model. And I think that we should end on that point, because we see him as a role model, and then when you go through his autobiography, you can understand how we can be role models for future Malcolm X's. What I mean by that is, when you read his autobiography, you notice that he looks up to the strength of his mother and his father. So how does his autobiography open? It opens with a retelling of how his mum stood down a crowd of KKK members who'd come with torches in the middle of the night. She stood them down, and that must have been a formative memory for him. And again, he had a high opinion. He had his criticisms, but he had a high opinion of his father's attempts at also reviving pride in the black community. So what we need to see in ourselves is, yes, Malcolm X is a role model for us today, but how can we be the role model for the future Malcolm X's? We need to have the strength in ourselves as individuals, as parents, as community members, if we want to see another Malcolm X rise up. Because, you know, it's really tempting to sort of like mythologize him, to sort of compartmentalize him, to say that he was a man of that time, wasn't he great, and then just leave it at that, leave his autobiography and his lessons as a dusty book on the shelf. Mm. What we need to realize is that he was a role model. He had his role models. If you want to see his like again today, we need to be the role models and have that strength as well.
That's a fantastic point to end on. How can we keep Malcolm X's legacy going today? Thank you very much, Ahmed, and to Sheikh Ahmed Hanif as well for joining us in the studio today. But that's all the time we have for this edition of the show, unfortunately. And thank you to everyone at home. Join us again next week for another edition of Eye on Islam. But for now, salam alaikum.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to the program For Humanity. We are looking at human traits in the Quran that promotes human rights. With these verses, we need to always keep in mind that they have different dimensions to them. They have different depths. They are not just one-faced verses. And that's how the Quran is. It's got depths until seven depths, as we read in the hadith. So we're trying to look at verses in the Quran which promotes the concept of human rights. One of the concepts that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants human beings to have is the concept of goodness, being good. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in one of the verses in chapter 25, verse 63, He says, وَعِبَادُ الرَّحْمَنِ الذين يمشون على الأرض هونا وإذا خطبهم الجاهلون قالوا سلاما. The servant of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala are those who walk upon the earth easily, and when the ignorant address them, they say peace. In this verse, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is trying to look at how a human being should be, especially those who consider themselves to be the servants of Allah. He said that when you walk on earth, you're going to deal with different people. The way you act towards them makes all the difference. Because this verse itself promotes the idea of peaceful coexistence and tolerance in society. إِذَا خَطَبَهُمُ الْجَاهَلُونَ قَالُوا سَلَامًا. When the ignorant people talk to them, and obviously the ignorant people, when they talk to them, they will talk to them in a bad manner. They're trying to cause problems. But the mu'min, in return, he shows peace, not violence. So it encourages individuals like me and you to be calm, composed, when we are even faced with the harshest of the ignorant behavior from others, and to respond with words of peace. When we say words of peace, the Quran says, Salaman qalu salama, or salaman salama, peace. peace is just a verbal word. So not literally when someone comes and throws accusations at me or curses me or told me things, I'm just going to say to him, peace, salama. No, actually peace, it's a word that needs to manifest itself in the person, in his actions. His actions have to be peaceful towards the other person because I'm capable of hitting, I'm capable of harming other people, I'm capable of doing a lot of things. But the Quran says to me, no, you have to control yourself. So the Quran wants me to promote something different. As a mu'min, I have to promote peaceful behavior. And this verse, it tries to speak about that and how we can produce peaceful behavior and give it to other people as well. Let us take a short break and then we will come back and continue.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program for humanity. So we are saying that the verse in chapter 25, verse 63, it promotes peace when it comes to people. So by promoting peaceful behavior, the verse helps to reduce conflict and promotes harmony in society. It encourages people to treat others with respect and compassion, regardless of their background or circumstances. This helps to create a society that is more inclusive and welcoming for all. So do you see how the ayah itself, just in one simple concept of just being good, being peaceful, it changes everything around? And also this verse itself emphasizes the importance of individuals being humble and respectful when interacting with other people. So I have a person with hostility towards me, a person who is trying to cause me harm, whether it is verbal or physical. But me, I'm saying, let it go. There's no need for violence. There's no need to harm other people. He's just being an ignorant. He doesn't know what he's doing. And I just walk off. This is what the eye is trying to promote. So a person who is in this state where he is letting go of things and not holding grudges or reacting, in fact, he's being humble. And he said, it's not worth it. So it encourages individuals to walk gently on earth and avoid causing harm or damage to other people. So the verse in Surah Al-Furqan, it actually promotes the values of peace, the values of tolerance and respect for other people, which is essential for promoting human rights. It encourages individuals to treat others with kindness and compassion and to avoid causing harm or conflict by promoting these values. So the verse in return, if we look at it carefully, helps to create a society that is more peaceful, more inclusive, and respectful to human rights. So when you look at the verse, don't just say, well, that just seems to be, you know, a very average verse. It just says, say peace and walk away. Rather, it's not as simple as it may look. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is trying to create a human conduct, a human behavior that we need to have. That if I have it, you have it, and everyone else around us have it, then obviously we're going to have a more peaceful society. Or let's say not everyone has it, but at least some of us has this kind of trait. If we have this trait, then at least we can help other people. Because if I'm going to get angry and he gets angry and she gets angry, then we're going to have a problem in society. And most of the issues that we have in today's world, where people constantly jump to violence and harming one another, either verbally or either physically, is because they don't have that tolerance towards one another. Allah says, no, Ibadur Rahman, and He was very specific. If you classify yourself as a servant of Allah, then that's your conduct. If this is not my conduct, and this is not your conduct, then we cannot say we are Ibadur Rahman, we are the servants of Allah. It will not work. Allah says, no, my servants are the ones that when they are faced with hostility, when faced with violence, when faced with other people being bad to them, they reply in a different way. Inshallah, we will continue in other episodes. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, salamun alaikum. You are listening to Lantern, and we have a new story, The Wolf and the Ass. An ass was feeding in a pasture near a wooden when he saw a wolf lurking in the shadow along the hedge. He easily guessed what the wolf had in mind, and thought a plan to save himself, so he pretended he was lame and began to hobble painfully. When the wolf came up, he asked the ass, "What has made him lame?"
and S replied that he had stepped on a sharp thorn. "Please pull it out," he pleaded, groaning, as if in pain. "If you do not, it might stick in your throat when you eat me." The wolf saw the wisdom of the advice, for he wanted to enjoy his meal without any danger of choking. So the ass lifted up his feet, and wolf began to search every closely and carefully for the thorn. Just then the ass kicked out with all his might, tumbling the wolf a dozen paces away. And while the wolf was getting very slowly and painfully to his feet, the ass galloped away in safety. "Sever me right," growled the wolf as he crept into the bushes. "I'm a butcher by trade, not a doctor. Stick to your trade."
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. This is IRIB English Radio. I am Beta at your service, and here is Lantern. Again, a new day, a new perspective, a new story. The story of today, which I think is really practical in modern world, is about sticking to your trade. What does that mean, sticking to your trade? You know, it means that do what you are familiar with, experienced in, or a skill that. Don't attempt to interfere with or give advice about something you aren't familiar with. So, I think everyone thinks before trying to solve a problem, from the most correct ones to the most false ones. Even if just it's a little, but at least we all know that we think. As you know, we have different parts in our brain, which are connected to each other, and we have to know how to use our dumb brain not to fall for the traps of other people. I mean, there are times in our lives which we think we are doing something for our own selves, but we got to know that we are making mistakes and errors again and again and again. And sometimes it costs our life. I'm not kidding. Every moment is a life. In my opinion, every moment is a life. So we have to be really thoughtful, really attentive, and at last, stick to our trade. Exactly the wolf. It was the wolf. It wasn't the lion. I was mistaken. The wolf and the ass of the story of today is the story of today's life of all. We, I don't know, follow some celebrities in social media. We follow some people we think who are really mature, who are really amazing. And we think we are the wiser one. But we don't realize the fact that we are enslaved and controlled by others and other people. So, as we saw, the wolf at the end of the story told that I'm a butcher by trade, not a doctor. And we have this issue in our own lives. We want to give advice to all the people. We want to, I don't know, do something we are not professional at, and so on. But just a moment, we have to stop and think, what am I doing right now? Do I have any deep knowledge about these things that I'm going through or not? And exactly this is the point. This self-knowledge that you have about your knowledge. I mean, you have to understand that what you know and what you do not know. What you have to and what you shouldn't do.
The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story, which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
So, despite the fact that we are so selfish, because we are human beings and the nature of human being has a special dark side, but we have to got to know that. But we have to get to know that there are times we make mistakes, exactly like this story. And as you know, human is terror. So being thoughtful, I think, is one of the ways to at least prevent these trauma in our lives. But be thoughtful. Sometimes you shouldn't try to not make mistakes. Make a mistake will actually give you some precious experiences. I mean, sometimes you may lose your food of day, but you will learn some beautiful, lessons here. Another thing which I'm going to discuss about is about the manners. As you saw, we talked a lot about the poor wolf, which lost his prey of the day. But we didn't talk about the ass, which was really, really smart in actually pretending to be sick and tell the wolf that he is sick and he may make the wolf sick too. And he shouldn't eat that. I mean, sometimes you have to seize the opportunity and find the opportunity out of the threat. And for doing this, I think we have to be really optimistic. Being optimistic is something really difficult in these days, because we are so pessimistic about every single part of the world, and at least we try to maintain realistic. Sometimes you have to go behind these things. You have to think bigger, you have to be wise, you have to find beautiful solutions at the moment. I mean, you don't have the time to think properly in some situations, which are most of the time emergencies. You have to be ready before that. And I think studying the story, listening to other people's advice, and reading books are some cliche, but at the same time, the best way to have the experience to cope with these kind of situations, exactly like the smart ass of the story of today. So, dear listeners, that was all the time we had for today's episode. Thank you for listening to us. Be wise. I bid you farewell. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah. Ana bi dhikrillahi tatma'innu al-qulub.
Aperture.
Welcome back to Aperture, everyone. First part of the documentary witnessed the rise and fall of gold used as currency throughout human civilization, from first gold coins in Lydia to their dominance of over 1,000 years in the Byzantine Empire. But what role does gold play in the modern international economic arena, and how has it made a comeback after the dollar took over for about half a century?
Under the gold standard, in which money is issued based on the reserved gold, the prices of commodities are more stable, because the government cannot simply issue more money. Also, trade deficits remain under control. Trade deficits under the gold standard refer to the effect of domestic gold transferring over to other countries due to an increase in revenue. If there is less gold, less money is issued. With less money, consumption and income automatically decrease. Export relatively increases, and the country sees a surplus in trade. Under the gold standard, the value of money is very stable, unless the amount of gold drastically increases. However, because of this, the gold era collapsed. The gold standard, in which issued money is tied to gold. When the economy began to grow rapidly, thanks to the Industrial Revolution, the amount of money needed to grow as well. However, because of the limited amount of gold, sufficient amount of money could not be issued. This problem became more evident during World War I. Countries that participated in the war had to issue large sums of money to fund the war. One by one, they began to discard the gold standard. The gold standard faced another crisis during the Great Depression. As countries began to exchange foreign currency for gold in fear of the never-ending depression, it led to disputes over gold.
As it has endured,
we'll revive and will prosper.
In 1933, President Roosevelt nullified the gold standard, and more countries began to discard it. After World War II, the world's gold gathered in the U.S., and the gold standard was gradually disappearing. In 1944, each country's representative gathered in Bretton Woods, USA. 44 countries participated, but it was actually a battle between England and the US, and in the end, the US won. Since then, the dollar became the key currency of the world. It was a defining moment for the US, as it became the empire of finances. However, during the Vietnam War, the dollar faced a crisis. More money was issued to fund the war, which led to increased prices and deficits. When the value of the dollar plunged, each country began to ask for gold conversion. It was the first crisis that the dollar had faced. In 1971, U.S. President Nixon declared the prohibition of gold conversion. He no longer allowed exchanging dollars for gold. Along with the Nixon shock, the era of gold ended and the Bretton Woods Agreement collapsed. The financial system in use today is the result of the Nixon shock. The U.S. is still home to the largest economy, maintains the dollar as the international currency, and other countries put their destinies in the hands of the dollar. The U.S., which had abandoned gold, now had the power to issue as many dollars as they wanted. The Asian financial crisis in 1997 that drove Hong Kong, Taiwan, and Korea to the edge of a cliff was the result of the U.S. recklessly issuing dollars. The reckless printing of the dollar can threaten any given country. This is all possible because of the absence of gold as a standard. The gold and the dollar which were linked together at one point, now were on diverging paths. The ups and downs of civilizations and currency have a special